Right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Guiding Light. So what I'm going to do is just begin by rereading the paragraph that I contemplated last week in the recording, and then I'll move on to the next paragraph. So I'm in What is the Self, page 7. And again, the first paragraph is what all of last week was based on, so we'll just read it as a review. The fact that man is not always conscious of his own awareness, self-conscious, that is, attests to the rootedness of self-awareness in the unconscious. This rootedness is responsible for the continuity of self-consciousness across all levels of consciousness, including the level we call unitive or God consciousness. There could be no self-awareness if this awareness were not, first of all, unconscious. As someone once noted, nothing rises to the conscious level that is not first on the unconscious level of consciousness. This fact tells us that self-awareness on the conscious level is not sufficient to account for self or consciousness, and that we must look to a deeper level if we are to find the true source and origin of self-awareness. And again, that last sentence really explains why we need spiritual practice, right? Because our conscious level of self-consciousness is not sufficient in order to see beyond it. So we have to go into the unconscious or the subconscious and pull that out. And that's what spiritual practice is all about. So today I want to start with the second paragraph on page 7. This deeper level, of course, is everything we call the unconscious. A level we often think of in terms of content and storage, or mysterious energies and powers. In a word, everything we do not know about ourselves on the conscious level, right? That's the unconscious or the subconscious. Would you guys agree? It's everything that we don't consciously know about ourselves that's currently hidden from us. She says, but far more important, on this unconscious level, consciousness functions automatically, spontaneously, almost mechanically, and beyond conscious control. Also on this level, consciousness as a physiological function connects with other physiological functions and is integrated with the total body-mind. This integration is such that changes in either the function of consciousness or in any bodily function is reciprocally experienced by the body and consciousness alike. So for simplicity's sake, what she's really saying here is, you know, other teachers talk about the I am the body thought. And she's saying this I am the body thought is actually subconscious. It operates. It's like the awareness that we have of self on an unconscious level, the unconscious awareness of self interacts with the body and generates the belief, I am the body. Now, this is really, really important because what this means is, you know, we've all learned, I am not the body, you know, such as from A Course in Miracles, I am not the body, I am free, I am still as God created me. But these kinds of mental concepts are never going to get to the root of the I am body thought or the I am body belief, because the I am a body belief is subconscious. So when we do things like meditation and contemplation, we are working our way into the subconscious to uncover where these beliefs really operate so that we can bring them into awareness and become free of them. But just walking around saying, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me, really isn't going to do a thing. Meditation and contemplation are what's critical for us. Now she continues, sometimes we forget this fact and believe instead that consciousness or self is somehow separate from the body, suspended in it, or can exist apart from the body. If this were so, consciousness could never be integrated with body-mind functioning or affect our lives in any way, which is obviously not the case. And what's really interesting about this last sentence, because she's still talking about the subconscious, I am a body belief. Come on in. I think they're knocking. Maybe not. But here she said body-mind functioning. You know, so this means that at the same subconscious level, this sense of self or consciousness is integrated with the body and integrated with the mind. You know, and I refer to that as the triad. I remember recently there was the word triad in the seven steps, and I'm really not sure what that particular person meant by triad, but a long time ago when I was contemplating the seven steps, I came up with this triad of the sense of self integrated with body, integrated with mind. And the places where they, again, are connect them as connected is at the subconscious level, not the conscious level. And again, this is emphasizing the importance of spiritual practice to get down to that level. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi.
She says, the great importance of the unconscious is that it is the root level of physiological functioning for the whole system of the psyche or consciousness. On this physiological level, consciousness is the reflexive mechanism of the mind or the brain, which is the mind's ability to bend on itself in order to know itself. And, you know, if you've been watching Bernadette Roberts, then you know she's referring to, like, if this was an outward-looking mind, now the human mind can look back on itself. And this is where the sense of self comes from, rather than maybe what we would just call the sense of world. You know, there's a sense of self because of this bending on itself. And again, she's pointing out that this is happening at an unconscious level. So on this physiological level, consciousness is the reflexive mechanism of the mind or brain, which is the mind's ability to bend on itself in order to know itself, know its own functions, experience, thoughts, and content. Now she has this in italics, which to me means she thinks it's really important. So we'll listen as if it's in italics. How's that sound? The act of bending on itself is the act of self-awareness. The mind's own awareness of itself. Because of this bending action, we have the subject-object poles of consciousness, which is the mind knowing itself as object to itself. So if we take this as the mind and it's bending on itself so that it can see itself, I'm going to try and do this with one hand so it won't be perfectly bent. Oh, wait, I can do it like that. Okay. This is the subject, mind. This is the object, mind. Or we could say this is the subject, consciousness. This is the object, consciousness. You know, I've heard some people when they're learning awareness, watching awareness meditation, I've heard just a couple people, not many, have this thought, or if they do, they don't express it. But, you know, I've seen people say this can't be it because awareness cannot be a subject to itself. That's exactly what she's telling us, right? It's all one thing, right? There's not a split here, but it is both the subject and the object to itself. So, for example, if you have the thought, oh, he's full of crap. And then you see that thought, he's full of crap. That's a judgment. I don't really want to judge anymore. I'm just going to let that judgment go. You see, the thinking or the seeing that thought was just a judgment and you don't want to hold on to judgment anymore was the subject looking at the mind, the object, which had the thought, you know, he's full of crap, right? So it's mind looking at mind, consciousness looking at consciousness, awareness looking at awareness. So again, she says, because of this bending action, we have the subject-object poles of consciousness, which is the mind knowing itself as object to itself. Thus, subject and object are the same. The same mind knowing itself. Self-knowledge, then, is the subject objectified, or the subject as object. And all self words, such as me, myself, and I, all self words are expressions of this reflexive act, expressions of the mind's own experience of itself. So even if I say, I don't really like coconut, when I eat coconut, I think it tastes like suntan lotion, and I don't really like eating suntan lotion. You see how we're both the subject and the object in that? You know, I'm aware of you know, the perceived self in this case, and I am reporting on the perceived self. So I'm the subject who's aware of the object, self-aware of self, mind-aware of mind, consciousness-aware of consciousness. Although the word self can become a mere concept or content of the mind, the spontaneous origin of all self words are the experiential expressions of the reflexive mechanism of mind. Again, she uses a lot of words, and it's funny because I read with you guys so much faster than I sit and read these things alone. You know, words that I may just sit and stare at when I'm reading this alone are words like experiential expressions of the reflexive mechanism of mind. I mean, you know, I can contemplate that till it blows my mind away. Contemplate the fact that whether it's a completely wrong-minded idea. You know, like Eckhart Tolle had a completely wrong-minded idea just before he awoke, right? His completely wrong-minded idea was, I can't stand myself, or something very similar, right? That's a wrong-minded idea. I can't stand myself. But then suddenly that blew his mind away. Who can't stand who? You know, who am I? Are there two? Are there two? Or is there just one? You know, most people don't even notice that even the wrong mind is a object to itself, subject. Eckhart Tolle noticed it in that moment when he said, I can't stand myself. And I was like, whoa, who can't stand who? You know, can there be two? So when you really contemplate that we have an experiential experience of ourself because we are both the subject and the object, Well, then I think probably one of the things that you can see from that is how you continue to reconfirm your sense of self. You know, so if you're not really doing this in a very conscious way, which is what we're learning to do, you are always going to see your, I'm going to call it the false self, although Bernadette Roberts doesn't. You are always going to see your false self, and you're going to keep reconfirming for yourself your false self. Like, you know, I can't stand myself. I'm so sick of hearing myself say that. My God, my mind is driving me crazy, right? But if you take that same reflexive mechanism and you begin to mature in it, that's when you begin to observe the mind with awareness or with the right mind. Ah, there's that thought, I can't stand myself. What can't stand itself? Am I that which can't stand itself? Or am I that which is aware of the thought, I can't stand myself? You know, you can use that same reflexive mechanism of the mind, that same self-awareness, to start becoming aware of deeper levels of yourself. Or you can use it to stay, you know, right there at the personal level. But it's always operating. You know, that's amazing. It's always operating. So self-knowledge then is the subject objectified, or the subject as object. And all self-words are expressions of this reflexive act, expressions of the mind's own experience of itself. Although the word self can become a mere concept or content of the mind, the spontaneous origin of all self-words are the experiential expressions of the reflexive mechanism of mind. Everything else that can be said of self is secondary to the act or function, which is self-awareness on the unconscious level. Thus, the reflexive act of mind is what the knowing self is. Self is not the result of the reflexive act. Rather, self is this act. So this act of being both subject and object, right? Being both subject and object, this act is what gives us a sense of self. You might even be able to imagine this, you know, like if we go back to the idea, he is such a jerk. I think I said something else, but if we go back to the idea, he is such a jerk. If the mind wasn't bending on itself, he is such a jerk might just float out there without you having the possibility of seeing it, right? I can't stand myself. I don't even know if you could have that thought. You need to have an eye that's watching myself to think I can't stand myself. So we'll just stick with the he is such a jerk, because you can see others, right? He is such a jerk. You believe it or not, you could have those types of thoughts without having any sense of self. But as soon as you become aware that you think he's a jerk, because you see yourself thinking he's a jerk, you now have a sense of self. Do you see that? So what she's saying is the sense of self that humans have comes from this reflexive mechanism, the ability for the mind to be a subject and an object to itself. And again, this same reflexive mechanism used in a much more mature fashion, like consciousness watching consciousness, awareness watching awareness, is also what awakens us. But it's interesting just to become aware of the fact that we have a sense of self because we can see ourselves. And that's true for every human. They can tell you all about themselves, can't they? I'm going to start skipping around a little bit to the middle of the next paragraph. She says, only when we become aware of our own awareness, self-conscious that is, do we move to the conscious level of consciousness, which is a reflective level. So this reflexive mechanism, again, is at work in every human. No matter how wrong-minded the human is, they can tell you all about themselves. They have a sense of self because of this reflexive mechanism. The reflective, reflecting on what you see at, you know, in mind as the subject of mind, this is where we begin to mature spiritually. This is where we begin to awaken. So the reflective practice is not automatic. The reflexive practice, the bending is, but the reflective level is where we begin to awaken. She says, only when we become aware of our own awareness, self-conscious that is, do we move to the conscious level of consciousness, which is a reflective level. Unlike the unconscious, we have some control over the conscious or reflective level. Here, we can deliberately reflect on ourselves, look within with introspection, or remain in the state of simple self-awareness. And of course, you guys can tell that that's what the spiritual path has been all about, right? The spiritual path is about entering this reflective level where you're using this subject-object relationship that you have with yourself to begin to look and see what's going on there. So, you know, for me, it began by noticing what I considered wrong-minded thoughts and choosing to let them go. And, you know, one question I've been asked a lot in my time is, who chooses? You know, who is it that's looking at the wrong-minded thoughts and letting go? And now I see that all those questions came from the fact that we didn't have this piece of information. We thought that if the wrong-minded thoughts were happening here and something else was starting to look at them and reflect on them, it had to be something else. And in fact, A Course in Miracles, probably understanding that we didn't understand, gave us a name for this. It called it the Holy Spirit. See? And so many people think the Holy Spirit is separate from me. But is the Holy Spirit separate from me? Right? It's the mind or consciousness ability to be the subject of itself as an object. Now, when we start looking at this, we can really start to see oneness better than when we think there is a Holy Spirit. And we also know awakening to oneness is what this is all about, don't we? So the spiritual path is all about using this reflective, this reflexive level of mind in a conscious, reflective way. And again, for me, it started off by, you know, using, I'm going to call it right-minded awareness to look at wrong-minded thoughts and start letting go of thoughts and seeing what I was believing that was causing my own suffering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then what happened after a lot of those thoughts went away is I started to glimpse awareness. I became self-aware, aware of awareness. And then the practice became remaining aware of awareness. Not one thing, aware of another thing. Awareness aware of itself because of this reflexive mechanism. Paying attention to itself. Again, listen to these words. You can see she's describing this perfectly, even though she doesn't use those words. Only when we become aware of our own awareness do we move to the conscious level of consciousness, which is a reflective level. Unlike the unconscious, we have some control over the conscious or reflective level. And you can feel that control, right? What she means by control is, for example, you can decide to sit down and do root cause inquiry and look. It's not unconscious. You made a choice. You, as the subject part of mind, made a choice that you're going to look at the object part of mind using root cause inquiry. Or you can decide that you're going to sit down and close your eyes and go into awareness, watching awareness. So this isn't unconscious, this reflective level. This is conscious. This is a matter of choice. Unlike the unconscious, we have some control over the conscious or reflective level. Here, we can deliberately reflect on ourselves, look within with introspection, or, and this is awareness watching awareness, listen to this, or remain in the state of simple self-awareness. See? She doesn't know the words awareness watching awareness, but she knows the experience of using the reflexive act of mind in a reflective way to just be aware of awareness, and she calls it self-awareness. She says, even if we do away with reflective self-awareness, which is that conscious level, we still could not do away with reflexive self-consciousness, which is the unconscious level. In other words, you can't say, starting today, I choose not to be aware of myself anymore. You can't do that. That's happening at an unconscious level. And since you can't see how the mechanism is working, you can't untie the mechanism. She says, if the reflexive mechanism of the mind were to cease functioning, it would cease across all levels of consciousness, from the conscious to the unconscious, as well as God consciousness. So as long as the reflexive mechanism persists, however, self persists because this mechanism is consciousness. So from the time you're born as a human, you have this. And then she says, once you enter into the reflective mechanism and you begin watching yourself with a spiritual intent, at some point, what she calls awakening can happen. And awakening is the doing away with the reflexive mechanism. And when you do away with the reflexive mechanism, there's no longer a sense of self, because the sense of self comes from the subject, the object, right? Being aware of the self. And she also says that this sense of self, it begins with any human, so it begins with the wrong mind, but it carries through all the way through to unity consciousness or God consciousness. It's just the idea of who I am or what I am changes, but the sense of self is still there. The I am is still there as long as this remains. Once this no longer remains, then there is no sense of self, which again is why she calls her other book, The Experience of No Self. So I'll read that last sentence again. Thus, if the reflexive mechanism of the mind were to cease functioning, it would cease across all levels of consciousness, from the conscious to the unconscious, as well as God consciousness. So long as this reflexive mechanism persists, however, self persists, because this mechanism is consciousness. I'm going to read this last sentence in this paragraph. Even though most of our passage through consciousness consists of dealing with its various experiences and content, our present interest is to focus on the true nature of self prior to all secondary experiences and content. So what she means by that is, instead of paying attention to the world or our experiences in the world, we want to use the reflexive mechanism to pay attention to ourself, self-awareness. Awareness, aware of awareness, right? And so that's it for my time. I'm releasing the mic. And again, thanks for hanging out with me.